So we're now making our way through some texts in the Gospel of Luke, and we have a series of parables. Last week, the lost coin or the misplaced coin. Now we have the dishonest or the crooked or the shrewd manager here. So we hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. There was a certain rich man who had a manager. And charges, indictments, were brought to the rich man that this manager was squandering the rich man's property. So the rich man summoned the manager and said to him, "What is this I hear about you? Give me an accounting. We have an audit here of your management dealings because you cannot be my manager any longer." So he's to be fired. The manager says to himself, "Well, now what am I going to do? My master is taking the position away from me. He's firing me. Okay, A, I'm not strong enough to dig. B, I'm ashamed to beg. Aha, I have decided what to do, that when I am fired as manager, people may welcome me into their homes." So summoning his master's debtors, one by one, the manager asked the first debtor, "How much do you owe my master?" First debtor says, 500 gallons of olive oil. "Well," said the manager, "take your bill, sit down quickly, make it 250 gallons of olive oil." The manager asked another debtor, "And how much do you owe?" And the debtor replied, 1,000 bushels of wheat. The manager says to him, "Take your bill, make it 800 bushels of wheat." The master, the boss, commended and praised the crooked manager because he had acted shrewdly. Gospel of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
So, an epilogue first. Last week we had the parable of the lost coin or the misplaced coin, which is really about lost people or misplaced people, right? Okay, so you ever try to stop a magazine subscription? You ever try to do that? Okay, so first of all, you get an endless stream of renewal notices with a little card. And of course, nowadays you can send the card in or you can do them via email and whatnot, or even texting or QR codes. But you fail to do that, so that will end it, right? No, then at some point in time, you'll probably get a free copy with the note that your paid subscription has ended, but obviously, you know, you've misplaced your card or something. So here's another one so that you can renew. Then there's high odds that you will get another free copy. This one from the generosity of the publishers who do not want you to get out of date with whatever information is being communicated, and that also extends the time for you to find your misplaced card to renew. Now, then there's typically a pause. So now you think the magazine subscription has ended. That is until one day, now there's another piece of mail arrives, whether it's email or postal mail, informing you of an incredibly generous one-time offer of 2 years of subscription for one paid year. You obviously have to take advantage of this. Now, if you fail to respond, there will then be another offer of some incredible magnitude here, and it will never, ever end. They know who you are. They know how to contact you. And they will never, ever remove you from their list. That's a parable of the misplaced people, the lost people. So the only way we're going to find the lost people or the misplaced people is by endlessly searching and looking for them, contacting them. We know who they are. We know where they are. We know how to contact them. And that's what we must do endlessly. We will not remove people's names from the subscription list. They have to do that. They are baptized. They are a member. And membership is not by convenience, and membership is not by crisis, because we're all going to have a crisis. Everybody will have a crisis. But membership is not by crisis. and it's not by convenience. You're part of the family because you're part of the family, and we gather for bread and wine, we gather for word, we gather for study, we gather for play, we gather for mission, and we need everybody at the table. So we know where people are, we know who they are, and we can at least match what magazine subscribers do, right? We cannot be outdone by the secular world. So that's the epilogue. Now we have another parable, which are always not what they appear to be, because all parables are ultimately about another world that's unimaginable. It's beyond what we can conceive in our small brains. And then it's upside down. I mean, here we have this crooked manager who is going to get praised by his boss. It's like, this is downright strange. It's actually embarrassing. Why does Luke have this in here? I didn't read the whole text, because if you continue to read on, you can see there's a lot of orange here. These are a lot of extra verses, you can read them at home if you want, where Luke now realizes this is an embarrassing parable. This just makes no sense. And so he starts to add on all sorts of reasons why this parable makes sense. The children of light should be as shrewd as the worldly, right, okay? We also should use our crooked cash faithfully to ensure our eternal home. We could also, if we're faithful with cash, then we can be trusted with more cash. Luke is embarrassed. Why does Jesus have this thing in here? Why is it in the Bible? Okay, the Bible has an incredible number of really embarrassing, awkward stories, yes? If you just stop and read, way back when, we've got Cain, who outright murders his brother. Why? Okay, greed, lust, power, typical human kind of motives here. But God loves them and God protects them. That's embarrassing. Well, you just have to go a few chapters and you bump into Jacob, liar, cheat. He stole the winning Powerball lottery number from his twin brother, right? And he's loved and accepted by God. King David, every human being walking around with a skirt, he's got to bed down. He's loved by God. The whole Bible is full of embarrassing stories. I think it was Mark Twain that said something like, the Bible is just a collection of all sorts of immoral people conducting immoral deeds or something. So, okay, let's start with that. Now, ever since M. Scott Peck, who is worth reading and has a lot of fascinating and thought-provoking things to write in his multiple books, The Road Less Traveled, The People That Lie, so on and so forth. But now, all of a sudden, the world has become divided into the good people and to the bad people, and we're always going to list ourselves under the good. We're not on that bad list. I mean, those are people who are serial rapists. Those are the people who are terrorists who blow up people. These are people who are chainsaw murderers and whatnot. That's not us. We're on the other side of the list. But on the other hand, you see, we're Presbyterians. We're in the Reformed tradition. So we find there is a cornerstone here, and that is, ever since John Calvin's been preaching in Geneva, there are no such things, people, as good people. There's no such things as bad people. There's only good and bad people. There's only, what I like to think of as, we are all simply walking marble cakes. Our virtues are tainted. Our prayers sometimes are stacked with all sorts of self-vested interests, okay? There is no such thing. There's just good and bad people who sometimes exhibit virtues and sometimes exhibit vices. Sometimes emotions are acted upon in very aggressive, hostile, destructive ways. So now we have this crooked, dishonest, shrewd. Well, there's a lot of words that go with them. But on the other hand, he is a bad guy, but we do admire what he did. He was in a pickle. He had apparently acted in some very immoral, unjust, perhaps illegal ways, and the audit has exposed him, and he's about to hit the streets. So now he recognizes that, wow, look at my managerial hands. I ain't going to be a digging ditches here, and I don't think that I have it. My pride is going to prevent me from begging. Aha! So he figures out a way to take the books, and again, he's good at manipulating ledger books, so he's going to reduce the amounts that people owe. Now, that's just wrong, wrong, wrong. So we go back to Exodus, we go back to Leviticus, we go back to Deuteronomy, and you can read all the laws, which if you have insomnia, that's great to read. That'll cure it. But law, 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 law. They say repeatedly that it is immoral, illegal, unjust, wicked for us to charge interest on loans. That's called usury. And to do that, if your own brothers and sisters, your own Jewish brothers and sisters, puts you in the capital W wicked category. So he is with the bottom of the bottom of the bottom here. And yet somehow or another, we kind of admire him in some ways. We sort of have this notion, especially in our particular culture, that the clever crook is someone to admire. Many, many TV series programs have been predicated on that very notion. And then we marvel at how they're able to escape week by week in the last minute and 32 seconds of the show here. Yeah, they're witty, they're clever, they're smart, they're innovative, they're problem solvers, they can weasel out of something. And then we start to slide down the slippery slope and we just suddenly forget, wait a minute, this is a crook, this is a bad person, capital B-A-D. Yeah, we're all good and bad, but this has got underlying bad. This is someone we want our children to emulate? This is somebody that we want to copy their particular strategies and techniques? No, no, and no. And then the boss praises him. Now we've made full circle. Why in the name of God is this in the Bible? Why does Jesus tell it? It's an embarrassment. But then again, stop. Look at what he did. Yes, he got himself in a pickle all by himself. Yes, he's looking at a blank chasm here to jump off for the end of his life. Yes, his motives are very tainted to be generous. Yes, they are to some extent still self-serving. But he did serve his neighbors. He did reach out to his neighbors. Keep in mind, usury is not accepted. So what's going on here with all these prices? They don't charge interest. Yeah, can't do that according to Hebrew scriptures. No, you have a thousand bushels of wheat, so that's $2,000, right? Well, you don't put the dollar, it's a thousand bushels of wheat. That's what you have to pay. Okay, but then we need to add on 200, because there's got to be a cut here for the manager. There's got to be some sort of little graft in there for his benefit. So you are, in effect, reducing the total price for the buyer, and you're willing to sacrifice some or all of your cut in order to make a friend out of the buyer and to save your own neck. But he is serving his neighbor. Well, we wouldn't do that in our culture, would we? Of course not. Ads proclaim 4.9% interest on credit cards, for instance. You got to read below, it says APR. That's above prime rate. Now, actually, you're paying 13, 15, 18%. Well, a third grader would know that that's outright robbery. That is a ripoff. Why would you do 15, 20, 22% interest in something? That's kind of crazy. That's called usury. That's called wicked. That's called taking advantage of people. He backs off from profitability. He's willing to eliminate the profitability or reduce it to such an extent that he is now going to serve neighbors first. So we make this kind of whole circle here where he's a crook, he's shrewd, not two things we want to put together, but when push comes to shove, it's neighbor first. It may benefit him, but its neighbor first. You know, in Michigan, Maine, I forget all the states, but I know Michigan, for now 40 plus years, they have what's called a bottle bill. Yeah, you have to get, of course, we used to have those when I was a kid, but then that disappeared. You have to pay a deposit on the bottle when you buy it. And then when you return the bottle, you get the deposit. And there's all sorts of lobbyists that fight against this in most states. But the sportsman in Michigan will tell you that within a week after the bottle bill being passed, all the streams and the woods and the forests and all the hunting areas and the fishing areas instantly got cleaned up. Because it was in people's vested interest to keep that bottle for themselves. You know, a dime may not see much, but, you know, you collect a bunch of them and then you take them to the store and you've got a dollar, you got a dollar 20, dollar 50, whatever it is. It's in people's self-interest to find the bottles, not throw them away. But ultimately what happens is the environment benefits and we don't have clutter all over the place. It may be in the crooked manager's best interest to save his neck and his job, but neighbors are served. And we can do that too, to look around for neighbors. There's neighbors who are homeless, there's neighbors who are jobless, there's neighbors who are unemployed, there's neighbors who are grieving, there's neighbors with material and immaterial needs, there's neighbors with tangible and intangible needs. There are needs all around that we can reach out to. Neighbors first is the name of the game of faith in the name of Jesus Christ.